Down at Third Man, the cricket podcast, talking all things cricket, from club cricket to million-pound franchises to the Test Match Arena, proudly supported by Woodstock Cricket.
Hey up guys, welcome to the Down at Third Man podcast. I'm delighted to be bringing you an extra bonus podcast this week. We obviously missed out the other week, we didn't have an episode because of various things, so we thought it was only fair we treat you. We have a little chat today with Chris from the 100 Report podcast. Really good podcast, all about the new competition, the 100, that he does with Charlotte. I'll be honest, originally we planned it just to be a quick 15-20 minute chat to drop in as a little segment into next week's episode, but we spoke for an hour. It was great fun. It was really fascinating, interesting chat about this new competition. And we thought, you know what, let's release it on its own, treat it as its own bonus episode to make up for us being useless last week and not getting an episode out. So hopefully you'll enjoy listening to it. It'll help preview 100 for you, and I would seriously suggest you go and listen to the 100 Report podcast as well to get a bit more info on the 100 that is coming up in about a week and a half's time. Before you get listening though to me and Chris chatting about the 100, just wanted to give a shout out as always to our supporters, Woodstock Cricket. Go and have a look at their website, treat yourself to something. Football's coming home, why don't you treat yourself because of that and get yourself something from Woodstock Cricket. Birdman 25, 25% off. I'm sure it'll be more than good value for money because it is some cracking kit. And if you're feeling generous because football's coming home, why not donate to Cardiac Risk and the Young? Why not donate to Cry By? Donating on our Just Giving page, we'll send you a bat sticker, we'll deliver a bat sticker to you by hand if needs be. We will sort it for you. So please support us. Please support our supporters. Please support our charity. Right then, we'll have the advert from Woodstock, and then you'll be listening to me and Chris talking all about the 100. Hope you enjoy it, and you'll hear from me again in a moment.
Looking for a new cricket equipment partner for yourself or your club can sometimes be tricky with so many options to choose from. How do you make the right choice? When you want quality, value, and service, there really is only one place to start. For more than a decade, Woodstock Cricket have been producing award-winning, high-performance cricket bats from their Shropshire workshop. Matched with their classy soft goods, luggage, and accessories, Woodstock Cricket really do tick all the boxes. Get in touch with Woodstock Cricket and find out why many loyal clubs, players, and international customers can't be wrong at info@woodstockcricket.co.uk.
So, bit of pre-recording going on for this episode. We're very, very lucky to have a guest with us, or I am anyway, Aidan Jono, busy as always on a Thursday night, busy training, or at least that's what they claim they're doing. I think there's more drink involved than actual training, but hey-ho. I'm really, really pleased to be joined tonight by actor, fellow podcaster, and also fellow Stokey, Christopher Ashman. How are we?
Hello, thank you for having me. I'm really well. I'm sort of a bit tired. I've actually just gotten into the depth of playing for my cricket team and had a very tight run of games, but I'm sort of feeling it. I think I might have to miss the next one.
So obviously, as I just said, from Stoke originally, but living away from Stoke in the main now. What do you get up to at the moment? What is a normal week in the life of Chris?
Well, quite a lot. So for context, I left Stoke when probably I was about 21, went down to London to drama school. I'm an actor. I predominantly do TV and stuff like that. I was on a Netflix show, Lucifer, and I moved out to Los Angeles to do that for a little bit. I was on EastEnders. I did a YouTube show called Liza on Demand. I do, you know, adverts, audiobooks, commercials, kind of just the life of a jobbing actor. And then on top of that, I do the podcast, The 100 Report.
So obviously into cricket, and we'll get onto The 100 Report in a minute, but how did you get into cricket and what's cricket to you now? Are we still playing regularly?
Very much so. So I came to cricket quite late. I would say I was probably about, well, however old I was, it was the 2005 Ashes series that got me into cricket at first. So Simon Jones, Steve Harmison, Andrew Flintoff, those kinds of cricketers were the people that got me into it. I got quite obsessed after that. I'm relatively obsessive about the things that I enjoy. So for context, when I was younger, I was very obsessed with The Simpsons. So I even had a diary where I would record every recurring character in The Simpsons. That is the level of nerdiness that I go to. And cricket just seemed like the perfect sport for that, because there's so many nuances and so many strange little records or titles that people have. And people are actually genuinely quite interested to know who was the last person to take a hat trick over the course of three matches, bowling the last ball, the first ball and the last ball, for example. But I still play. I started off, I'm a left-hander as well, which is helpful. That meant a lot of club teams wanted me. I was a fairly terrible batter, decent enough bowler, a bold slow left arm, I still do, and iffy fielder. I always describe myself as a good ground fielder. Don't ever ask me to catch anything. Not don't stick me at deep mid. Oh, I'll drop everything.
So obviously the 100 Report is your podcast at the moment. Really good listen. Some great episodes on there. Particular favourite was with Tim R. Mills. So the 100 Report podcast obviously started last year or just before last year, ready for the first, obviously, what should have been the inaugural season, been pushed back a year. Tell us a little bit more about the podcast itself.
Yeah, sure. So as you said, it's called The 100 Report, the word 100. And we started it, yes, around about the time the first draft happened. So we did, initially it was a podcast, an audio only podcast. We decided a little bit further down the line, especially because lockdown and the COVID pandemic halted everything for a year, we decided to open it up to do a video podcast on YouTube. And that's kind of what we do. It's still available on podcast accounts. But ostensibly, we thought it was a really interesting new concept, this idea that it's a bit like a T20, but not. There's new rules, and especially jumping back to the idea of these little nuances, how much does a game change if an over is 10 balls long rather than six? How quick is it going to go when there's only 10 changes of ends, for example? So we thought it'd be really good. Plus, because it is putting the women's game on the same pedestal as men's game, both myself and Charlotte, Charlie, my co-host, as I'm a man and Charlotte is a woman, we thought it would be quite good and quite reflective of the competition if we had a 50-50 split of the podcast as well. And it sort of started from there. We did some team breakdowns. We did a few other podcasts around sort of peripheral series. We got some fantastic interviews. We were so lucky and so fortunate to have Tamar Mills, Kumar Sangakkara, Stephen Schemmel from the BBC, all of these people who came on. And we just enjoy talking about it. We're basically just transferring what we would do whenever we go to Lords or the Oval to watch the Blast or go and watch a test match. We're basically just doing that, but in front of a microphone. So we figured, why not? Let's have a chat about this new thing and see where it comes from.
Sounds really good, and it is really good. As I say, I would suggest people go and have a listen, especially if they are planning on watching The 100. So obviously the main reason we got you on tonight is to talk about The 100. When this goes out, probably on next Wednesday, it's going to be 1 week till it actually all kicks off with a women's game. Let's be honest, I think it's fair to say there's plenty of controversy around The 100. There's plenty of people who maybe do not agree with the idea. But I think everyone's heard that. I think everyone's probably by now heard, this is why I don't like it. It's going to affect the county championship and so on and so forth. And I think everyone understands that. So what I'm really interested in, as someone who's quite looking forward to it and is willing to give it a chance, is actually why could The 100, why should it be, or might it be, or should we hope it'll be a success? And what is it about The 100 that should take it out there, I guess, to these new fans that we talk about and sort of this next generation of cricketers?
I think there's a few reasons, to be honest. Obviously, the 50-50 gender balance is a big thing. You only have to go around to a lot of club cricket now, to local village teams or local club 11s, to see that there's actually a lot more girls playing than there was. I only know from the team that I'm playing for in the Staffs League that they often get an 11 together that is predominantly from the girls. So there's a greater interest in women's cricket. And I think that's to do with the idea that women's cricket is being televised a little bit more. There's a kind of more celebrity status about some of the bigger women's cricket players. And I think the 100 is a great advert for that, particularly, certainly in this first season. I don't know how long this is going to continue, but they played both matches simultaneously, sort of. Yeah, the women's match is generally first, then there's an interval, and then there's the men's match. And in this interval, one of the reasons that I think it's going to be exciting, and you less look at it as just a cricket match, as more of a festival with cricket in it, because you have all kinds of people who've signed on. You have Becky Hill, who's going to perform in the opening one. Now, I'm a little bit long in the tooth, so it wasn't an artist I'm particularly au fait with, but a lot of younger people like it. It's been signed up with the Croods. There's loads of cross-promotion going on. Jax Jones is going to DJ. There's a lot of stuff to like about the actual event itself, and it's going to turn it into more of a party. But in terms of why we need the 100, I think, to be honest with you, a lot of it falls down to USP. So I feel that the Blast was probably one of the first versions, or, you know, the previous iteration of the Blast was one of the first T20 franchise games. There are lots of positives, and I love the Blast. I love going to watch any match I can go to. I can't really get to Lancashire or Nottingham, which is where I usually go to, so I usually go and watch Surrey. But I guess the difference was that there was still a little bit of umming and ahhing about T20 when that first happened. And then about 10 years later, the IPL came along, and everybody knows how big the IPL is. And I think a lot of it is about maintaining or finding that one franchise, because there are a lot of franchises all over the world. I think basically every major cricketing nation has a franchise T20 league. This is changing it slightly. It's making it just that little bit different, just that little bit intriguing. So if you're a T20 fan, it's something that appeals to you because it's a short form game, but it has just these little differences. Now, I think that's appealing from a fan's perspective, because I'm curious to just see how it works. It might actually promote some really interesting things, like this idea that you can actually bowl a 10 ball over, or if you've just got smashed for your first three balls, maybe you cut it short and switch it around. So there's a lot of different ramifications. And from a player's perspective, I think it would be very exciting to play in something that even you don't really know how it's going to work. I think even Tamal Mills said that when we were on the podcast, there's still this kind of a question mark on how it's going to be played. And I think there's so many questions, kind of on a positive sense, that makes me so intrigued to see it. And I just think it's going to be fun more than anything. And I think mixing it with, you know, cross promotion with the Croods, and also with getting these pop artists and a sort of a festival atmosphere, and especially getting free tickets for younger children, and very cheap tickets for younger children in certain circumstances, it's just going to encourage people to go for a day out and make it a day. It's not just a cricket match, it's everything. So if you are allured by the idea of going to watch Becky Hill perform, then hey, you get two cricket matches for free. So I think that there's a lot that could encourage somebody to go and watch the matches.
Yeah, I think it's almost a bit of a dip into the unknown for current cricket fans. And I don't think that's a bad thing at all. I think, as you say, the numerous possible iterations and different ways it could go is really, really interesting. Or it is for me anyway. I think it'll be, as you say, these new tactical battles, these new ways of approaching games, the 10 to 5 ball over thing, interesting how that's going to work. So I think that's where, for the cricket fans. And then, as you say, that it seems very focused towards sort of the younger generations and the families, which
I know people say obviously the blast tries to be, but I think we all sort of know that it does almost become a little bit more like the going the football, a bit more lager-louty at times, which I can't say anything because I'll be on the lagers myself. But I think it offers maybe that more to the kids. And I think when you look at, I saw the advert with Lego yesterday, you've got obviously all the match attacks cards, things like that, I think just automatically screams out to kids. And I know something we spoke about before we started recording was obviously it's all well and good for people from one of the 18 counties to say, well, my kid goes to Blast, my kid likes to Blast, my kid's got a team to support. But whereas in football, I can go and support Port Vale because good I live you. Down, yes, unfortunately for some, because I live down the road and that's in my family's sport because it is literally 2-3 miles away. There is no actual county team in the county championship that someone from Stoke could go and support. However, if I was a kid and I saw, well, actually, I can support the black and white team, Manchester Originals. I know Manchester is reasonably close, been a few times, whatever. That's who, Man United, Man City. You know, I think that gives it that extra sort of appeal to kids, that sort of idea that actually they might get into it, because it amazes me how many children I see play cricket at schools and then they almost seem to drop out. And I think it's almost because they haven't got something to follow. They follow England, but how often do England really play, and can they really go and get to watch England games when you're charging 50, 60 quid for the cheapest tickets for a one day? I don't know. Whereas if you've got something every year, it's on free-to-air TV, it's 10, 15 quid get in, I think that's it. That makes a big difference.
I really agree with you. And I think as much as I love the Blast, I think it was Imran Khan who, when he was setting up the PSL, said that he only wanted 6 teams. And as we see in the PSL, they have 6 teams. Now, when asked why, he said it was to do with the concentration of the talent available, because he wanted up-and-coming Pakistan players to be as good as they possibly could. And how do you do that? Instead of having 2-3 world-class players on a Blast team that are spread across 18 counties. Now, you know, we can get into a discussion about, well, you know, some T20 Blast teams are definitely not as good as others and so forth, but it's still a sort of a dilution of the talent pool, so to speak. Whereas if you have a smaller amount of franchise teams, instead of having 3 on a Blast team, you could have 6 on a franchise team. Now, I know people have reservations about franchise and money in sport. It's a reality. You know, you only have to look at football to see that even Division II teams are doing a lot that is to do with company and football franchising and monetizing. So it's a reality. As much as we don't want it to be, it is. So you sort of have to get behind it. And this could actually genuinely provide a lot of revenue. They've already promised money to the 18 counties as a sort of a dispensation for losing their players for a certain amount of time. But because there's only 8 teams, they've had all of these players concentrated. It's particularly noticeable in the women's squads because obviously their sort of county structure was changed to a slightly more quote-unquote franchise model. So now instead of having Loughborough Lightning, you've just got Lightning, which is a sort of a catch-all term for anywhere around the East Midlands, basically. And it works. It's to do with concentrating the quality, therefore promoting it. I know when I play cricket that I get better when I face better bowlers or when I bowl at better batsmen. And I would think any cricketer would, you know, professional or otherwise, would probably agree to that.
Now, before we get on to the players and talk a little bit about the actual cricket that's going to happen, just one thing that I noticed mentioned there was obviously about the fact that some people are worried about the franchises. Now, one thing that I have still haven't managed to get a proper answer off people about is that obviously the IPL and Big Bash and also probably the PSL are going to be 3 of the main ones, and I guess the CPL, going to be some of the main ones that it's going to, the hundreds game, be compared against. Now, obviously, they are franchise leagues who and have 8 or 6 or however many it may be franchise teams. However, in them countries, they still have their first class system with state or
counties or however provinces, as they call them, obviously. And that hasn't affected how well their first class competition has worked. It doesn't seem to have affected that them provinces or states or county teams. They're still being as successful as before. They're still able to do the same as before. If anything, it's brought more kids into the game and meant more kids might be interested in them. They're not going to guarantee it, obviously. You can't guarantee that someone who wants to go watch Manchester Originals is now going to become, obviously, a Lancashire fan, or someone who goes to Trent Rockets to become a Derbyshire fan. It's not guaranteed, but there's a chance. Yeah. Do we think that the 100 will work the same as these leagues? It won't affect, or it shouldn't affect them necessarily too negatively or at all negatively. Do we think maybe it's a worry because Britain isn't used to franchise teams? It's maybe something we're worried about, and actually we maybe need to look at the IPR, look at Australia and the Big Bash and say, actually, as long as it's bringing people and money into the game and bringing in awareness of the game, there's no reason that it should affect what already exists.
I think the point that you literally just finished there sort of says it all. It says it all in leagues. To the point about franchise leagues in the UK, I would say yes, as far as, you know, home teams and home structures, we don't really have a franchise system per se, unless it's a slightly more obscure sport. But it's changing. I think from when I was a child, I didn't really care about watching the NBA or watching the NFL or watching the IPL even. Whereas now there is a growing audience for the IPL. Most people who are county championship fans will watch the IPL with a certain amount of interest. Now, I don't know. I don't want to sound too attacking or anything, but it seems a double standard if you're into one set of franchise teams, but you're not into another. But I think it can work. So let's take, for example, Ben Stokes. Ben Stokes is going to play for the Northern Superchargers, which is a kind of catch-all for Yorkshire, Durham, probably a bit of Cumbria, a bit of Lincolnshire, so forth. Now, you're not necessarily going to follow Yorkshire because Ben Stokes does, but you're going to follow where Ben Stokes goes. And if Ben Stokes is playing for Durham, all of a sudden, if there's a six-year-old kid who goes to watch him in Northern Superchargers and he smashes 100 off 70 balls, they'll go, great, let's see, because he's actually going to go and play a first-class game in Durham. So why don't we just go to Durham and go watch it? And especially because I'm sure you've been to county championship matches, it's not that expensive to get in, and you get a whole day's cricket. And once you're sold on Ben Stokes, you go, great, I can watch him bowl for the entire day. This is a win.
Yeah, I don't see why it wouldn't be a positive, as saying. I hope that people will back it and allow it to have that time and to become a success, because hopefully it'll make a big difference to cricket and cricket as a sport and a whole in this country. We can but hope. Now, obviously, it starts in a week's time, or it will do when this goes out. There's 8 new teams. There's players from the counties, I guess you would almost expect for them teams, but also not. And there's, of course, the overseas. Now, obviously, the overseas have been hit a bit because I think it's fair to say in the main, it's the Australians have chosen to not play, which I think is understandable. It's one of them things. People who are criticising the 100, I don't know how you can really criticise them for COVID. It's just one of them things. They can't do much about it. But I can't remember who it was I was listening to today, but they said that they felt the 100 should stop saying that they've got some of the world's best players playing because they hadn't. It was now second rate. And for me, having looked at the names, I know people will say, oh, but Warner and Stoinis have gone. But for me, when you're adding in Devon Conway and Quinton de Kock, I think, if anything, you're taking a slight step up. So just because the Australians aren't here, who are the third or fourth best team in the world across the three formats, I would say that, well, yes, we haven't got Indian players in. For hopefully, maybe in future years, it'll happen. But let's be honest, no one else has Indian players in. So if you've still got good South Africans, New Zealand, Windies, surely that still classes as having the world's best players just because you're missing Australia.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think that it's a strange I think it's a strange argument to make. Yes, look, you know, let's be honest, the BCCI, they're never going to give you Virat Kohli. You know, we all know it's the Indian players are very protected. The potential is there. We spoke on our podcast about a release that the BCCI, you know, it sets a precedent that, for example, Jemima Rodriguez and a number of other Indian women's international players are playing in the 100. It sets a precedent that it's open to a possibility. And there was a report that said under 24-year-old Indians so could come and play. So the likes of Prithvi Shaw, Devdutt Padikkal, Ravi Bishnoi could come and play in this. I think that's an excellent potential. But I think you are absolutely right. Yes, the fact is there are so many quality players. And, you know, you look at Manchester Originals, for example. They lost a couple of players, but they replaced them with Lockie Ferguson and then I can't remember off the top of my head.
Carlos
Brathwaite, yeah. And I mean, Carlos Brathwaite is the guy who smashed Ben Stokes all over the place in the World Cup final. He's a fantastic player. And you think Northern Superchargers, yes, they lost Aaron Finch, but they got Fafdi Plessis. Now, if you ask me, and especially if you're an IPL fan, Fafdi Plessis opens the batting for Chennai. He is a wonderful player. And like to your point, there are a dearth of talented players out there. And I don't think we can attack the players for having, you know, burnout or fatigue or, you know, being beholden to the international schedule, because they absolutely should. And I remember making this point on a podcast that I was on previously. You have to think back to the first round of the IPL. You know, you had players. I remember Matthew Hayden was one of the main players, and Matthew Hayden was just getting towards the end of his career. I think a lot of people had thought he pretty much retired at that point. But the fact that they have the players that they've got from, you know, the West Indies, like Andre Russell's playing, and you also have these stalwarts of the England squad, but also all of these wonderful players on the periphery. I can't see how you can knock the caliber of player that's going to be playing.
Yeah, totally agree. I think people are maybe, again, looking for a criticism that they can give. Obviously, I've read comments, people saying, well, is it really that much stronger than the Blast? Well, I would say so, because there's still probably a good 10 to 12 names. And as you say, it's condensed into 8 teams that wouldn't appear in the Blast. You've got 3 high quality overseas plus probably 3 or 4 quality England players or England squad players in each team. That doesn't happen across 18 counties. Yep. So obviously we've got the 8 teams. We'll have a quick loop through them and sort of just point out a few of the main names and maybe have a little quick prediction of who we think could be in and around at the end of it. I'm sure that's very, very, very hard to do, because they are all that good and you just don't really know.
Well, yeah, but if you ask my co-host, she is adamant that the Southern Braves are going to win it. Now, they have a very strong squad. Both squads are very strong. But yeah, no, anyway. Sorry.
No, I totally agree. So obviously Birmingham Phoenix, the first team up in sort of the list that obviously the ECB have sent out, or the 100 have sent out. Got some real big names in there from an England perspective. When you look at Wokes, Moeen Ali, names also that maybe aren't as big at the moment, but I think plenty of people will know when you look at the likes of Benny Howell, Liam Livingston and Pat Brown, players that people will know of, and they've gone, as you say, probably gone from being the main player in a county team to being probably sixth or seventh player in the Birmingham Phoenix lineup. And they've obviously got Adam Milne and Finn Allen from New Zealand, plus, of course, well known around Stoke-on-Trent, Imran Tahir.
Yeah, Imi's playing. I'm so happy.
Everyone's desperate for see Imi play and do his celebration, no doubt. Birmingham Phoenix. What do we think of their team? Is there any names that stand out as the ones to watch there?
Yes, definitely. I mean, you know, you have Finn Allen, you have Moeen Ali, you've got Pat Brown, and Pat Brown is a much underrated death ball. He's a fantastic player. And you've got these sort of, like, you know, people who fly under the radar but are very effective. So Daniel Bell Drummond is a perfect example, and some developing players. And I've been a huge fan of Tom Abel, and I I think this could be a really good platform for him. But even on the women's team, they have two of the most exciting bowlers around. They've got Abtahar Maksood, who's a Scottish, she's a leg spinner. And she is, go and look at her stats. It is absurd how good she is. They also have Elise Perry, who's arguably one of the most famous women's cricketers around. And they've also got Izzy Wong, who is
quick.
Probably one of the quickest around. Yeah. And I think both of their squads are very exciting. And it's got Chris Wokes. I love Chris Wokes. I would have
everyone loves Chris Wokes.
Yeah.
So next up is London Spirit. Obviously, if anyone who doesn't know, I will mention, quite a lot of people seem to know them by the colours, sort of the royal blue, shall we say, the sort of quite a deep blue team. Zach Crawley is a centrally contracted player. Got some names that may be a bit of a blast from the past when you look at Ravi Bapara, Joe Denley, Jay Dernbach. Obviously, Owen Morgan doesn't get much bigger than England's white ball captain. But you've also got a few newer names. Obviously, Mark Wood. Everyone loves Mark Wood. And people like Mason Crane and Josh Inglis, Dan Lawrence, real good youngsters in there. And they've then got Mohammed Amir and they've got Mohammed Nabi, two quality overseas players that, again, I think people maybe think, well, Mohammed Amir only plays for Pakistan, Mohammed Nabi only plays for Afghanistan, but you only have to watch them in any of the, even the IPL and think, well, obviously not Mohammed Amir in the IPL, politics and all that, but I'm sure he would be in if it wasn't for that. And again, very, very strong.
Yeah, definitely. I can't remember. I read somewhere that Mohammed Amir was applying for a British passport. So you never know. You never know.
Never know. Could happen.
They're captained by England's two international captains. You know, they've got Owen Morgan and Heather Knight. So from a structural point of, you know, from a logical point of view, if you have those types of players at the helm, it's only going to be a good thing. But there are some really good players. I think Ravi Bapara's move here was actually a stronger move for him, and I think he's going to be a more effective player and will be a regular occurrence in the squad. But they've also picked, you know, look at the women's players. They've got Deandra Dottin, and they have Deepti Sharma, who's making waves in the Indian squad. I think that they are a solid one, and if you had to press me, compared to last season's squad, I think it's an awful lot stronger. And they got Roelof van der Merwe, and I love Roelof van der Merwe.
Great player. Explosive entertainment, guaranteed. And again, I think this is where I'm looking forward to 100, because if I was to say down the club, Louis Rees or Roelof van der Merwe, they'd probably go, yeah. Whereas I think someone like that could, one of them two could really come out of this and be, actually, Louis Rees or van der Merwe, wow, like they could make themselves a name because of the sort of player they are, because of how entertaining they could be. Next up is the team that I'm going to be supporting, Manchester Originals. Obviously, the big name's always going to be Jos Buttler. When you add in Carlos Brathwaite, Lockie Ferguson, Colin Munro, there's some explosive power and pace in there. Also got Ollie Robinson, Phil Salt, Matt Parkinson, Lamonby, some real good names. Sam Hain, who, how on earth he's not in the ODI squad, is beyond me. Yeah, I think they're a lot stronger than they were last year. I still don't think they're quite at the standard that they're going to, the men's team will win it. But the women's team, I think, are one of my favourites for it. Might just be because I like Kate Cross and Alex Hartley from the No Balls podcast. But when you also look at the fact you've got Sophie Eccleston, you've got Harmanpreet Kaur, and you've got Lizelle Lee, that automatically sounds like a very strong lineup straight away.
Yeah, 100%. And with Mignon Dupree, who, you know, she's been such a stalwart for South Africa for a long time, they're a very, very strong squad. And I love Kate Cross. And I think it's an absolute boon. And Lizelle Lee is definitely one of my favourite batters that plays in general. But you're right, the men's squad, to me, I actually think one of the most incisive purchases that they got was Stephen Finn. I think that he's much underrated, and you can't discount his international experience. And he's always been a solid performer, in the county circuit, I think it was a really shrewd move. But you're right. I remember when I saw the first set of players and I went, I don't quite get what they're going for here. But they changed it all up. And yeah, I mean, I know Phil Salt, you know, well, it would have been a week ago at the time this goes out, but Phil Salt didn't show his colours exactly in the ODI against Pakistan, but he's such a talent and I think he's going to be very exciting. Yeah, I rate this team.
Definitely. And I hope they perform because, I say, picked them to support. They are black and white and I do love Manchester, so it was all guaranteed there. If they'd been red and white, maybe not. Going on to the Oval Invincibles, quite a few recognisable names straight up in terms of England and the men's team. Roy Byrne, Sam Curran, Sam Billings, Tom Curran, Laurie Evans as well, who quite a few people will know. And Saqib Mahmood, who's obviously had a great day today. And Jason Roy and Rhys Topley. It feels like you are just picking sort of a very, very strong England 11 straight up. And then you go and add in the fact that they've got Colin Ingram in. Great, great player, does really well across all of the franchise leagues, I think it's fair to say. Sandeep Lamishan, who I think is probably one of the most underrated players for me. I don't understand how he still keeps on getting picked by franchises, but doesn't really seem to get the game time in sort of like the IPL. When you watched him in Big Bash, I just watched him thinking, surely he breaks the IPL net this year, but somehow still doesn't happen. Sonal Narine, interesting one. Seems to have gone off the boil a bit, but still a top quality player at this level. And the one I'm most excited by constantly in that team is Will Jacks. Desperate to see Will Jacks in an England shirt, to be honest, in the next few days, hopefully.
Oh, 100%. I was so pleased when he was announced in that squad. I came across him. He made like a 25-ball 100 in a warm-up match in the UAE. And I went, who is this? I think for the Oval Invincibles, one of the shrewdest things that they've done is with their overseas players. They obviously, as you said, they picked Sunil Narine, Sandeep Lamachani, and
Colin Ingram.
Colin Ingram, that's it. I had a bit of a brain out there. But yeah, they've picked three players that are going to be around for pretty much the whole tournament. There are other overseas players who might not be around for everything. And I think that the consistency that they'll have in the squad is going to be a lot better. The one downside is that they have England players, an awful lot of England players that are on the periphery. I think this could be a real chance for Rory Burns as well to show us that he's not just a test player. Having Donny van Niekerk in the women's squad, Maddie Villiers, Fran Wilson, it's a strong squad. I personally, I know that my co-host would disagree, but this is my dark horse, as in I think that these guys are going to get to the final, just based on having the squad alone, but also having the consistency in players available.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing that people often forget about when it comes to these leagues, especially I know the Big Bash, obviously, it was amazing how much teams can form can change based on people being available for the first six matches and then people being available for the rest of the tournament. And I think that's something that hopefully won't come into play massively, but it's still going to, I think, isn't it? And so it's something that people have got to be aware of. The Welsh Fire, again, lots of good names, lots of big names that people know straight up, like Ollie Pope, Johnny Bairstow, Tom Banton, Ben Duckett, David Payne, who's obviously another one who's got in to the England squad at the moment. Liam Plunkett, obviously the World Cup hero. Almost it feels like he's been forgotten about. I'm really hoping that he can remind people that he was key to the World Cup. Let's be honest, we were going backwards in the World Cup and then we brought him back in for Moeen and he was massive for us. So some names people will notice. No, straight away. Some names that people maybe won't when you look at Ian Cockbane, Josh Cobb, Ryan Higgins. You've got people there who maybe aren't going to be known straight away, but still, I think, offer a lot. And then you've got the overseas. Now, Kais Ahmed's always done a very good job over in sort of like the Big Bash. Jimmy Neesham, everyone loves Jimmy Neesham. I think that's just fair enough to say. And I think people forget how good a cricketer he actually is just because he's funny on Twitter. And then you've got Kieran Pollard coming. Obviously, to start with, it'll be Glenn Phillips, but Kieran Pollard, you don't get much bigger name, much better experience than that man when it comes to any form of franchise league. He is probably one of the kings of franchise cricket.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he is almost the face of the Mumbai Indians. And you think just he can turn a match on its head. And yeah, he's fantastic. I think that they picked their overseas players very well. They also had in the sort of redraft, they had a couple of selections that I thought were really good. So you mentioned Ian Cockbane. They also picked up Jake Ball. So we mentioned this when we did the team talk on the Welsh Fire, which is on our YouTube channel. It seemed like they picked an awful lot of people that are in current good form. So they picked Jake Ball because he had a great blast last year, for example. I really think that they swapped everything around quite well. They have a good, solid base of players. The women's team is obviously a little bit shaken because they lost Meg Lanning, which is a shame. But they had Sunay Lewis in replacement, which I think is great. But their biggest one, and this is the most exciting thing for me, was when I found out Sarah Taylor is coming back to cricket. And I can't wait. I'm definitely going to go and watch a Welsh Fire match just to go and watch Sarah Taylor keep wicket.
Yeah, you don't get better hands, I don't think, out there than Sarah Taylor. And I think, again, someone who I really hope will be able to sort of show that off on free to air and to the whole nation, and people go, wow, actually, that's amazing. That is top level wicketkeeping. Mm. And hopefully it inspires some kids to maybe think, actually, that's what I want to be, which I guess is really what this is all about. Northern Superchargers have got the big name in Ben Stokes, probably the biggest name, isn't it, really? You've got Bryden Carson, who obviously we've seen a little bit of today. Faf du Plessis, as we mentioned, has come in. Everyone loves Faf. I'm a big fan of the great cricketer, so I love the chat about Faf and him always having his top off. Fair play to the bloke. If I looked like him, I wouldn't wear a top either, to be fair. And there's plenty of big names still in there when you look at the likes of Chris Lynn, Adil Rashid, David Willey. And again, another person that I'm a big fan of, Mujeeb Rahman. Again, yeah. Another one who for me has shown off in the Big Bash and PSLs that he is a real, real top-class spinner. I can't imagine wanting to be the batsman who's facing Adil Rashid at one end and then Mujeeb at the other, knowing full well that you've still also got Stokes, Bryden Carson, and you've got David Willey all to bowl at you as well. I just wouldn't want to be that batsman because where you're getting your easy runs from, I do not know.
Yeah, and then tie in the level of batting they've got, like Chris Glynn, Ben Stokes. You've even got Tom Coler-Cadmore, who I think is very much up and coming. And as far as the women's team goes, they've got some real names here. They were actually famously the first team to pick one of the Indian women's squad. They got Jemima Rodriguez. But they also picked Laura Vulvaert from South Africa, who, if you haven't seen Laura Vulvaert play a cover drive, go and do it right now because it's just masterful. And then Lauren Winfield Hill as well. It's a strong squad all round, but you're right, the variation in their bowling attack is wonderful. You think you've got Mujeeb, you've got Adil Rashid, then you've got David Willey. You'll see that almost every squad's got a left armer, but I rate David Willey. I thought he was pretty hard done by when he was omitted from a World Cup squad. I know he had a couple of tough games, but he's a fighter and he's got good moxie, you would say. So I think Northern Superchargers are a lot, there's a lot to like. And like, who doesn't like Ben Stokes? I mean, that's reason enough. If it was exactly just Ben Stokes and that was the only player, I'd go and watch him.
Next to last team is a team that I think it's fair to say everyone thinks is probably the team to beat, and it's Southern Brave. You look at the men's team, it's just like a never-ending list of players that I would not want to bowl to and I would not want to bat against. It is just pure firepower. I mean, you look at it, obviously you've got Jofra Archer, Jofra, do you get a better white ball fast bowler? I don't think you do. I pray he's going to be fit for it, or at least for a little bit of it, because he is such a good player. And when you think that you've not just got him, you've got George Gorton, you've got Chris Jordan, you've got Timon Mills, Craig Overton, Andre Russell, all bowling as well, that is just a lot of pace. And it isn't just pace. They've got Danny Briggs, they've got Liam Dawson, Max Wallet. There are so many options in that bowling attack. I don't actually know how you narrow it down to just having five or six bowlers. I honestly could bowl eight, and I think that's a massive thing. And then when you take into, obviously, count, it's 100 balls. In reality, is there a spot there for a David Milan-style player? You could argue yes or no. I don't think they're going to be worrying about that too much. I mean, half of them names, bowling-wise, can hit a big ball. Jofra, I'm sure, at some point will hit a big ball. But when you've got Alex Davies, Quinton de Kock, Devon Conway, you're looking at even like Delray Rawlings, James Vince, and even Ross Whiteley. I mean, I know hasn't necessarily done it for Ashcombe Park, but he's done it for every other team he's ever played for. And that's just big hitter after big hitter after big hitter after big hitter. And I can see him having a day maybe where it all goes a bit Pete Tong and they're all out in 80 balls and they haven't hit actually anywhere near what you would expect from them. But I also can see them being maybe, say, the first team to break, say, the 200 barrier or something along those lines.
I agree. I mean, just look at the firepower. It's ridiculous. You can tell by the squad the type of gameplay you're going to get, which for me is just very, all the more reason to go and buy a ticket to watch Southern Brave. So I'm going to go and see a bunch of them live. And let's just say most of the games that I'm going to live have got Southern Brave in them in some way or another. But yeah, and you look, you know, as far as that David Milan style thing, I reckon James Vince is probably going to fulfill that. But then we had this whole discussion on the podcast is, do you have your first drop player, you know, your traditional number three anchor player, because it's only 100 balls, do you open with them? And it was a difficult one to talk about. But as people from Stoke-on-Trent, it would be remiss of me to not mention that they've got Stoke-on-Trent's Danny Wyatt. So that's reason enough for me to like the squad as it is. But they've also got Stefani Taylor. That's huge firepower. And Anya Shrubsole, obviously England's opening bowler. There's an awful lot to like. And Smriti Mandhana has just joined them. There's a lot. It's wow power. Whereas I think the Oval Invincibles are just sort of quietly sort of coasting along, I think that these guys are just so in your face about it, the squad selection. But you're right. I could see if anyone is going to break the 200 score in the 100, it could be this team.
Yeah, and I must admit, there's another name from the women's team that I'm really a big fan of late, is Sophia Dunkley. So I think, again, the women's team are probably just as strong as the men's, and that's impressive.
Yeah, definitely. I'm very excited by Sophia Dunkley. I think that she's, you know, if you had to sort of pin me into a corner, I think she's developing, but a very exciting prospect as a player.
And then that leaves us with one team to go. That is the yellow team, Trent Rockets. They've got, obviously, Joe Root, England's Test match captain. I think this, for some people, think this might be Joe Root's opportunity to maybe show that actually he should be in the T20 squad. I'm sure no matter what happens, he will make a name for himself even more. If he isn't already well-known enough, I'm sure he will make himself even more well-known. But I look through the team and, again, what a pick when it comes to the overseas, when you've got Rashid Khan, and he is probably the best white ball bowler in the world. Definitely probably the best spinner, but probably whether you're looking at spinners or pace bowlers, Rashid Khan is the man you want. Teams either see him out and accept the fact that they're only going to get two or three and over from him, or they go at him and give him a five foot in a T20 game. And I think he is just so sublime. And the fact that he likes to play horrendously weird helicopter shots when he bats, just to add a bit more entertainment, as if the bowling wasn't enough. I think that's a top pick. They've got Wahab Riaz and Darcy Short as well. For me, solid, consistent franchise players who are going to make a difference in more games than they're not. And then you add in Lewis Gregory, you add in David Milan, Tom Moores, Samit Patel. I mean, I love Samit Patel. Luke Wright. Players who've been there, done it, got that experience. I think that's something that maybe won't have been thought about, but will make a big difference to them. And the man that I still really like and wish he was in England squad, Alex Hales. I would argue in the top five white ball batsmen in the world currently, on having seen him in the Blast this year. Obviously, the Big Bash, he was unreal. I think he, again, this is a huge opportunity for him to turn around and say, I know you're not going to pick me, but the public thinks you're mad now for not picking me, because I could see him easily being the highest run scorer and being the one that every kid wants to be, and yet he isn't in the England squad, which would be crazy.
It's daft. It sort of makes very little sense to me now. I get why he was removed from the squad. I understand the reasons. And I think, you know, if you asked me, it was an appropriate action to take, because, you know, there's a set of rules that players agree to. They are in the public eye. They represent more than just themselves. But time has passed and he's such a quality player. There's very little that you can say wrong about Alex Hales' short form game. For sure, this is going to be a way to certainly prove to the ECB or to the powers that be or whatever that he's not going anywhere, and he is, well, arguably one of the best in the world. But yeah, to your point about Joe Root, I think he's also going to have something to prove. As far as the women's squad as well, it's also got one of my favourite players around, which is Catherine Bryce. Again, you know, I talk about figures and things like that. If you look at Catherine Bryce's batting averages and her bowling averages, you just won't believe them. I openly encourage. But they've also got the duo of Catherine Brunt and Nat Siver as well. And the fact that they you know each other personally so well, but they also have played on the same team inside out. They know each other's game. Catherine Brunt, just fantastic opening bowler. Nat Siver, great all-rounder. Yeah, there's some real exciting stuff here. And I also think David Milan is going to have a little point to prove here, because, you know, a lot of people have been questioning his side in the squad, especially, you know, during the India tour, for example. I think that this is an opportunity. So perhaps this is the team where opportunities lie. And it's got Luke Wright. And Luke Wright, he was always my favourite player when he was in the one-day squad. I always thought it was a crying shame he never got a test match.
Yeah, good, really good player, Luke Wright, and it still amuses me highly that you still see that picture come up of him back in. I want to say, was it like the Singapore Franchise League where he won man of the match and got a blender? Always highly amusing. Great stuff. I'm assuming that he will get slightly better man of the match awards if in the 100, but I guess you never know. So the last thing, I guess, two things before I let you go. First one's all about the 100. I know it's hard because there's just eight very, very good cricket teams there and we don't quite know how it's going to work. But for the men's competition and also the women's, two finalists and then the winner, who would you go with?
Ooh, men's finalist, I think I've probably alluded to it. I think it'll be Southern Brave and Oval Invincibles, if you had to ask me right now. The women's teams, probably Birmingham Phoenix and Trent Rockets. That's my gut feeling.
And who are you going for the winners, or can we not pick?
Who knows? I mean, the problem is with short form cricket, there's always that it might not be your day factor. Yeah. So I don't know. It is quite hard because people have already assumed Southern Brave are going to just mince it. And I think the reason that I'm thinking Birmingham Phoenix for the women's squad is just the strength of bowling that they've got. And I think that might be the determining factor that they have Abtahar Maksud and Izzy Wong playing for them. Very strong bowling unit. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know is the best answer, but if you had to force me into an answer, I'd say Southern Brave for the men's, Birmingham Phoenix for the women's.
I think they're pretty fair choices, and I think that's a real good point about the bowlers. I think short-form cricket, is people thought it ruined bowlers. I think it's brought bowlers, made bowlers more and more important, and I think the 100 ball and the fact you can do the 5 or 10 ball overs, I think just increases the importance than bowlers. And as a person who attempts to be a batsman, I obviously always love watching the batters. And I always feel like kids in the main prefer looking at the batters just because they're the ones who are smashing it all to all parts. But I think this is, again, another competition where actually you're going to be looking at MVPs being actually those bowlers who really keep it tight, take the big wickets at the big moments, and probably still do it a big ball. I mean, let's be honest, Jofra, he still hits a big ball. Rashid Khan, he can still hit a big ball. He's still got it in the locker, so fair play to him. It's been really, really good talking to you about the 100. Really excited. I'm sure it's going to be a great competition. I'm really, really hoping that everyone goes and listens to the 100 Report podcast and use it as their sort of fountain of knowledge for the upcoming tournament, and use it as their reference point for anything they need to know, because it is really worth doing. It is the best place to find out. I found that myself. But I can't let you go without asking you the most important question of all about North Staffordshire cricket, and that is, what is the best oat cake filling at Tees?
Oh, I tell you what, I've had some bizarre ones thrown at me. And I'm a bit basic as far as oatcakes. Obviously it's going to have cheese in it, but I'm cheese, bacon, depending on my mood, a bit of white onion and some brown sauce. And that's the perfect oatcake for me.
Oof, pretty solid choice. Not a massive onion fan, but I can't argue. It's an oatcake at the end of the day. And as long as it isn't one of these bizarre ones that you sometimes see in these upmarket restaurants that, well, yeah. I have seen some things, and they are certainly not an oatcake that I would expect from High Lane oatcakes, to say the least.
But no, yeah. Mate, no. I used to get them shipped to me when I lived abroad, and that's how important oatcakes are, not just to me, but to the people of North Staffordshire.
And how important they should be to everyone. Everyone should give them a go. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on, Chris. It's been really good to talk about the 100. People out there, go and listen to the 100 Report podcast. It's brilliant. It'll really, really help you if you're wanting to watch the tournament and you haven't maybe looked into it that much in advance. That is the place to go. And yeah, once again, big thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. And thanks for all of those kind words. It's been my pleasure, and it's been great chatting to you.
Down at Third Man, the cricket podcast, proudly supported by Woodstock Cricket.